Hello, and welcome back to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Today is a deep dives episode. I'm your co-host, Nick Agar Johnson, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Paige Otto. Paige, how are you doing this fine afternoon?
I'm doing great, Nick. Ready to get the second half of the second round off to the races with it. So let's do it.
There you go. Yeah, YouTube people already know what's going on because they can see the lovely little big board in front of us designed by the great Albert Gim. But we will be continuing our second round mock draft from last time around, picking up with selection number 46. I think that's all the preamble we need. Paige, shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so I am back on the clock here for the Dallas Mavericks. An interesting team to try and pick four in a number of aspects, not the least of which being the fact that the entire front office has changed, and also they spent the entire season without Kyrie Irving, who presumably will be back, which obviously changes the depth chart quite a lot. Yeah, this is, I'm struggling with which direction to go here, but I think I'm ultimately going to go with just taking a big swing, and I'm going to take the swing on Luigi Sweego, who 7'3", center for Mega, and a whole lot of potential, a whole lot of potential. I mean, he's someone who, you know, obviously being 7'3" is helpful, but he moves quite well for a guy of that size. He's shown certainly potential with the jump shot. I'm not all the way bought in quite yet, but in terms of players who are available at 46, he almost certainly has the highest ceiling of anybody left available. And, you know, for all the incredible success that the center rotation had for the Dallas Mavericks a couple years ago when they were in the NBA Finals, I'm really worried about what Derek Lively's health situation looks like going forward. Certainly it has unfortunately been very, he's been very unavailable due to health throughout his young NBA career, which is unfortunate in multiple different areas, not the least of which is the fact that it makes things a lot more difficult for the Mavericks side of things. And even with Daniel Gafford on board, I'm still worried about what their longer term rotation is going to look like at center. So yeah, I'm taking Sweego. Hopefully the bet works out on him. Certainly he's someone who, if he hits his ceiling, can be an absolutely killer third option offensively and incredible rim protector on the other end of the floor. If it doesn't work out all that well, hey, it's the 46th overall pick. But I think in terms of taking the swing, this is a spot that makes a lot of sense to do it. And he's a player that makes a lot of sense for Dallas in terms of being that swing.
Yeah, and he has some very exciting offensive or playmaking flashes to the game, too. Can play a little bit off the dribble as well. As
yeah.
And it doesn't look uncoordinated or unathletic. I mean, he has a very good handle, especially going to the rim and downhill as well. And he's only 19. And where he plays, too, Nick, has some good reputation. KK Megabasket in Serbia with Avdi Topic, and Jokic and Boban as well. So, I mean, their NBA repertoire is pretty good in terms of, you know, hit rate and just some key faces coming out of that program, KK Megabasket in Serbia too. But, I mean, he's been a riser throughout this season too, and there's still some speculation that he might go back. But I mean, as of today, he's, you know, still in. He hasn't withdrawn. So we're going to go with it. But I think the Mavericks make a lot of sense. And they need kind of high ceiling type of players, right? Because I feel, especially at the center position, kind of their whole roster too, they're not really some big upside swings. And someone just to pair off of, you know, Flags prime as well. So I think bringing in Luigi, he could fit pretty nicely there, and there's still a tons of potential and room for him to grow.
How dare you leave out my guy Nikola Jovic? I'm disappointed in you.
It must have slipped my tongue.
No, but I mean, in all seriousness, Mega has been one of the developmental powerhouses for quite a while. they would probably compete with, you know, maybe not the Kentuckys and Dukes of the world, but in terms of like quote unquote second tier colleges draft pick wise, Mega can compete with almost all of them, even if you don't include, you know, multiple time MVP at the top of the board in Jokic. So yeah, I mean, certainly there's a lot to like about how they have developed players over the years, and Sligo looks like he's next on the list. But I should shut up now because it is your pick and you're picking for your Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, 47. Suns are up. They had a phenomenal year. I mean, making the playoffs was one thing, but they definitely have that foundation back, and the team seems like they get along really well together. And I think Jordan Knott has created the exact culture that was needed down there in Phoenix. And Matt Ishbia has reassured all of us that Devin Booker is not going anywhere. He is the valley. So obviously, Dylan Brooks, Jalen Green, Colin Gillespie, Malawach has definitely improved this throughout the year for us. Oso Iguodaro, Ryan Dunn, but I think the main thing for them, Nick, I mean, you can see on here, I mean, they kind of need a little bit of everything. But I mean, they gave a lot of people kind of hope that it's on the ups in Phoenix. Because I think a little while there, it was kind of like, where are we going from here? Especially after, you know, the KD trade. They got a lot of those connective glue guy pieces back to the puzzle. And Dylan Brooks had arguably his best offensive season for the Suns this year. But Devin Booker is not a point guard, guys. So, and he kind of had his worst season shooting the three ball this year too, just because a lot of him was put on, you know, playmaking wise and distributing. Colin Gillespie was a huge help there as well. And Grayson Allen from, you know, a 3-point perimeter perspective, but they need a point guard. Obviously, I think they would rather trade for a point guard, Nick. But I mean, when you're looking at, you know, 47 and the amount of players that have kind of, you know, withdrawn, I think I'm going to go Donovan Dunn here. You and I both are kind of a huge Donovan Dunn believer. And once he kind of got over that, you know, leg injury, right, that strain, he kind of, you know, was the Donovan Dunn that we knew he was at New Mexico, right, especially in the Big Ten Conference Tournament. And in March Madness, he is basically what the Suns need. And even if it's him coming off the bench, but having his playmaking chops and just that leadership that he brings coming off the bench, I feel good about it. And I think he could fit in pretty nicely in Phoenix. So I kind of really like this fit. And I'm not just saying it because I'm picking for my team, but I think it makes a lot of sense at this point in the draft.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, yeah, The caveat that sort of needs to be given with all of these picks at this point in the process is, hey, this was a lot easier last time around when we did this in April. But yeah, I mean, it does make a lot of sense. I certainly could not have been more wrong about where the Phoenix Suns were at. And I think part of that is because I consoled myself with, hey, the Kings may be in an awful spot, but at least it's not as bad as the Phoenix situation. And then the Suns went ahead and made the playoffs. So that sort of ruined that whole line of thinking for me, didn't it? So thanks for that. I'm blaming you entirely.
That's okay. I understand. Let it all out.
If I let out all of my takes about the Kings, we would be here until after after the draft. So let's avoid that can of worms for now. I'm on the board at 48 for the Orlando Magic. Yeah, this is definitely a weirder situation than it would have been even 2 weeks ago, where both you and I were quite confident that they were preparing to flame out in the play-in tournament, and then they extremely super did not, which, yeah, hey, good for them, but also makes evaluating things a bit more tricky. I think, yeah, this is tough because This is a team in a weird spot that's not anywhere near as weird as I thought it would be even 2 weeks ago. I'm just going to go Emmanuel Sharp for them. Just get this team someone who can play on both ends of the floor, someone who's a winner, someone who, you know, isn't the craziest shooter, but is more than good enough of a shooter for a team that, even though they're not dead last like they were for a couple years running until the Kings surpassed them in terms of being the worst three-point shooting team in the league, they're still a team that could use help in that regard. I was admittedly not... It's weird to say, but I'll say it anyway. I was a bit disappointed in what Jalen Suggs put together in the playoffs this year. He was not who they needed him to be, and so getting additional help in the guard room would be helpful. Getting someone who is more ready-made. I was sort of torn between picking more of a project player for a team that, you know, for all their struggles, their core is quite young. And so, you know, in some regards, they're certainly last year, I would say they were ahead of schedule. And then this year was a whole weird morass. And they fired Jamal Mosley approximately 0.7 seconds after their season ended, which, you know, was not exactly the best possible sign for how things were going inside the Orlando locker room. So getting someone who I fully believe in as a leader, as a winner, as someone who can contribute on both ends of the floor in Emmanuel Sharp. Yeah, I mean, I think either I was going to go project or I was going to go sort of older veteran guy who I think can help out in a number of areas. And Sharp, I think, is someone who checks that box.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, we saw how when Franz was out, you know, the three games that the Pistons, you know, ended up, you know, taking the series, it hurt them a lot. I mean, Paolo had to step up big time, and he did. I mean, he was on fire for the Magic, but he was also at times, if he wasn't on, then I'm surprised the Magic even put up, you know, 65 points a game. I mean, yeah. Desmond Bain came in there and, you know, he had flashes, but I mean, he wasn't nowhere as near as productive as he was in the regular season, right? And then Jalen Suggs just could not make a shot to save his life in that series too. He really, really struggled, but granted, the Pistons defense was remarkable throughout the series, and that starts with Ausar Thompson. So yeah, I think that pick makes a lot of sense, getting another ball handler for the Magic. All right, I'm up at 49 for the Raptors. A lot of people were sleeping on them for the playoffs, Nick. I mean, yeah. A lot of people thought the Cavs would sweep them and, you know, they end up eventually losing the series, but it was 2-2 at one point. And I think for them, you know, they have the size, the length. Scotty has really proven that he can be that close to number one option for them. And, you know, BI was hurt, but then obviously came back. But they do have the length and size to them. RJ Barrett, CMB, definitely. I was happy with how he played in the playoffs. But they need a ball handler or they need a big, honestly, in my opinion, because Poeltl is not going to be their, you know, number one option down low. I mean, they just need something else down there. So,
Yeah, I was, it made me sad to see Jakob Poeltl because, you know, he was someone who I, many stops ago on my writing career, wrote a feature on him that I think was one of the best things I wrote early on in my writing career. And you know full well how critical I am of my own stuff. So, you know, anything that I actually had a positive reaction to that I had written is always something that sticks with me. And, you know, yeah, he just, his body fell apart on him. You know, it's not something that is particularly uncommon for 7-footers. And, you know, very happy for him personally that he got the big deal that he got before his body fell apart. But obviously from Toronto's perspective, they would have liked to have him be physically whole because they didn't really have much else down low.
Yeah. I actually am going to go a completely different way. I think Bruce Thorne is one of the most undervalued players in this draft class, I think, Nick. I can't remember if we talked about him last year, whatever the case may be, but he's a fire hydrant trying to knock off his spot, right? But he also is one of the best scorers in college basketball this season. I mean, he nearly averaged 20 points at 19.9 points per game. Add that in with 4 assists, 5 rebounds, shooting 40% from 3 at you know, a little over 4.5 attempts per game. He is just a bucket getter, and I think bringing him in, obviously they do have Jamal Shedd as well, but Bruce Thornton produces a lot more, and I think he's going to bring that production into the NBA, and he stayed with Ohio State all 4 years too, so I think he's this type of ball handler that is going to go in there, play a little, you know, pick and roll with B.I., R.J. Barrett, Scotty Barnes, and kind of give them a little ease on, you know, at the top, and kind of let those guys do their thing, you know, going to the rim, shooting off the perimeter, and he's going to play make and distribute because he's proven that he can do that. But he can also, you know, get a bucket when needed and provide kind of that ease when those three are kind of getting double teamed. But I think he's a playoff player too. I think he's a player that if he was on the Raptors, he kind of fits super nicely in that culture. And I can kind of just see him in Toronto.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense in terms of the fit. I would not want to be an opposing backcourt player trying to score on Jamal Shedd and Bruce Thornton. That just seems like a miserable time. And certainly, certainly making things miserable for opponents would be a nice boost for Toronto. Yeah, they're weird in the sense that it seemed like basically the entire season everybody was waiting for them to collapse, and then they just didn't. They just sort of kept that going all year long, and certainly ahead of schedule for them given that they won literally 30 games last year.
Yeah.
All right, I'm on the board here for the Denver Nuggets, and I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go with Andre Stojakovic. Get someone who, it's funny because if you are only looking at the last name, you probably will be expecting a very different player than who Andre Stojakovic actually is. He's almost the mirror image of his dad. You know, he's a little bit smaller, so more of an on the wing type guy. Excellent slasher, gets to the basket at an incredibly high rate and finishes really well once he gets there. Is a decent enough connective playmaker. You know, it's not a strong suit for him, but it's, you know, he's also not sort of a black hole by any stretch of the imagination. He shot 24% from 3-point range this past year, and I think he's a better shooter than that, given that A, he shot 81% from the line, and B, that his previous 2 years of college, he shot above 30% from 3-point range, but not that much above 30% from 3-point range. And for his college career, he is at exactly 30.2% from 3-point range. So again, if you are expecting Peja, you're not getting Peja. But for Denver, getting someone who can be, again, I think he's not a crazy defensive playmaker, but in terms of, you know, he's got a great frame, really solid athlete, knows where he's supposed to be defensively, puts in the effort. You know, he's someone who I think will be a plus piece defensively sooner rather than later, who if he gets those openings to, you know, make his way to the rim, he gets there, he finishes once he gets there. And again, I think he's a better shooter than he showed this year. I wouldn't bet on it long-term. There's really not much reason other than his last name to bet on it long-term. If he does figure the shooting out, he's going to be a steal in this portion of the draft. But even if he doesn't, I'm quite confident that he's at minimum a cup of coffee kind of NBA player. And when you get to the 50th pick, any NBA minutes at all is pretty much right at or better than expectations. Given that I think Stojakovic is an NBA player, this is a pretty easy one for me.
Yeah, and, you know, he's extremely efficient at the rim too. He's definitely grown in terms of physicality and just playing through contact, right? Yeah. And I think with Illinois too, he kind of, you know, was able to show a lot more of his offensive prowess, like getting in the mid-range. I forget if it was Albert or Quinn that saw him in person, but they're like, hey, like he looks bigger in person. Like he's very broad shoulders. And I mean, obviously he has those NBA genetics too, right? But he's definitely, you know, an upside swing, especially on the wing. You know, you mentioned the 3-point percentage, but he's kind of your guy that you want on the wing, honestly, that to come off the bench and kind of be that connective piece and kind of go from there. And I think with the Nuggets and their development with wings, I think he would fit in nicely there. All right. So I'm up at 51 for the T-Wolves. They do play tonight against the Spurs. Game two did not go too well, but I mean, this is one of the best series so far in the second round, Nick. I mean, it could really go both ways for them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, whoever you pick here is not going to be able to suit up tonight, but you know.
True.
That's fine.
I mean, I would Dosunmu, he was one of the best trade deadline gets that they got for them. And then our guy Jalen Clark too.
Yeah.
He's shown some flashes there. I mean, me and you were big on him during his draft cycle. And obviously it starts with Ant, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, Kyle Anderson. Bones Highland has gotten, you know, a couple minutes here and there for the T-Wolves. But and then Terry Shannon Jr. has kind of, you know, ascended for them too. I think I'm going to go I feel like if I don't do him here, you're going to take him.
Oh.
I think I'm going to go Jason.
Is he eligible?
Let me look.
I don't think he is. Yeah, see, this is this is the excellent radio portion of the podcast where we have to triple check if any of these people are actually still in the draft.
Oh, he might have. I think he did go back. I can't.
Yeah, he's not on the early entry list.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
I can't find it. Maybe he did. Well, if he is going back to school, then I would probably just take instead, since we can't find it, I'd probably just take Trayvon Brazil here, honestly. I think they do need a lot more front court help with Rudy. Like, I think they just need a guy that can come in and, you know, he has that length and size, insane athlete, can kind of play that two-man game with him and Rudy, and especially with Ant too, can catch anything above the rim, massive lob threat, and he's super athletic too, can run in transition. He's kind of been the type of player, Nick, that's always like a roller coaster for me. Like, you can love him, but then hate him the next day, like type of player. But, I mean, we mentioned it throughout this episode. Trayvon Brazil is the type of guy that, with so many prospects electing to go back to school, this is where, you know, he gets his, you know, spot in the draft, right? Because I think if that would happen, he could have easily, you know, dropped out of the top 60, gotten a two-way contract somewhere, but yeah, I mean, I could see it happening for him up there in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone who, not quite to the degree that Dylan Mitchell has, but definitely someone who has occupied many different positions on my boards over the years of his draft eligibility. So, yeah, you know, maybe he ends up getting drafted higher than he would have if he declared. Certainly last year, I think he would have gone a lot lower than this, but given where we're at this point in the draft, again, this is really cup of coffee range. And I think he absolutely is someone who could, you know, have a season or two of significant NBA minutes. So yeah, makes sense. All right. I am back on the board for the Houston Rockets, who took, have they had a second? This is where I'm trying to remember who we picked in.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Dylan Mitchell. That's immensely helpful for figuring out what I'm going to do here. Yeah, this is tough. I'm trying to decide what part of their situation I want to try and draft answer here. Yeah, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to take Malik Brown. This is a team that, whether or not Kevin Durant sticks around, they have plenty of guys who want the ball in their hands, plenty of guys who can score at high volume. And so just getting them someone who is, I mean, he's a masterful defensive player. And, you know, it's funny because when I was writing my Dame Sarr article a little while ago, it was like basically every number I turned up on Duke's defense is like, well, they're really, really good, and it's Dame and it's Malik Brown. And, you know, everybody else is fine. It's not like, you know, Cam Boozer is a solid defender, but just watching plays where Dame and Malik Brown would shut off entire possessions just by themselves. Again, he is a special defensive talent, and the offensive game slash range slash, you know, any sort of things you would want to throw out on that regard, you know, he's not going to wow you with anything he does offensively. You know, 50% free throw shooter is not the most encouraging. Yeah. But, you know, when he does shoot, it's right around the rim. And, you know, he makes those shots when he takes them. And so, again, for a team that has a lot of guys who are willing and able to score, having someone who can cover gaps defensively like he can, I think would be huge for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Rockets and you're leaving, you know, the second round with Dylan Mitchell and Malik Brown, I would say that's a win, just in terms of, you know, defensive capability and, you know, defensive depth off the bench and getting players that, you know, are going to do the dirty work, and they're really going to be players that provide production off the bench. Maybe not offensively right away. I don't think, you know, that's going to garner them a lot of minutes in the NBA, but in terms of, hey, I need you to come in and lock down this guy, those are the two guys that you kind of want off your bench at any given time. So I agree there. So I'm up next with pick number 53 for the Clippers. So
before you get there, I realize that I screwed up and we owe our loyal listeners a brief break. So let's get back into it right after this. So yeah, my bad, but sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. All right. Clippers 53. And Brazil is off the board. I just picked Toppin, but he is going back to Texas Tech. You kind of had to go way back in the archives for that because he kind of did it like right when it opened. So
yeah.
Obviously I have Darius Garland now, Brad Beal, Jordan Miller. Quiet. I think I'm going to go Richie for them, Nick. I think they need a lot more shooting on the wing, and Richie also brings size on the perimeter for them. And, you know, I like him as a defender too. And I think the Clippers kind of need kind of that two-way player in Richie. Obviously, it was awful that, you know, he missed the rest of the season with a torn ACL, and we kind of didn't get to see him, you know, with him and AJ. But when he was on the floor this season, he definitely was a high impact type of player. And I think him playing off Kawhi, Darius Garland, he's going to get a lot of open good looks, and he has a good motor to him. But yeah, I think he'll at least, you know, get some productive minutes with the Clippers.
Yeah, it makes sense. And they're one of the teams that can sort of wait on him to get right. You know, I'm assuming that if not all of next season, he will miss certainly a significant portion of next season, but you know, they're a team that can afford to be patient, you know, let him sort of work his way back. And then, yeah, once he is out there, you know, definitely, I mean, hopefully this isn't, you know, a sort of recovery from injury thing where he loses a step, because he's, you know, again, I think his defensive contributions might be affected by him not coming back all the way right. But certainly, you know, again, at this point in the draft, picking him up for the Clippers as a team that can afford to wait on him, I think makes a lot of sense. And yeah, he answers a lot of questions for them in a way that it makes sense for them to say, you know, we're going to take this guy, wait it out, see how it goes. I am on the board for the New York Knicks.
For a sigh of stress.
This is definitely a sigh of stress because, you know, I'm not a Knicks fan, but I'm from New York, and I know that Albert will, you know, we're using Albert's beautiful system here, and so if I make a bad pick for the Knicks, you know, it's game over. Exactly, yeah. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that guy. Yeah, this is tough. I think I'm going to go, man, this is so tough. I'm going to go Malachi Moreno for them.
Mm.
I think as excellent of a center rotation as Kat and Mitchell Robinson is when healthy, unfortunately, when healthy is a very big, important qualifier for the Mitchell Robinson experience. And, you know, they saw some flashes for Ariel Hakpourty this past year, but he's certainly not someone who I'm afraid of drafting over in any sort of context. And, you know, Moreno is certainly a bit of a project, but at this point in the draft, I think the Knicks are in a spot where they need to bring in guys who can be home run swings for them, then really sort of change the trajectory from, you know, top tier of the Eastern Conference, but maybe needs a little bit more of a push to be a title contender. Moreno is someone who, if he turns into the best version of himself, is just about the best possible value that they're going to be able to get at this portion of the draft. And if he doesn't turn out, hey, I mean, they still have Mitchell Robinson and Hakpourty, and even if one of the two of them has health struggles, it's not like they're bereft of center depth. So, Albert, please don't kill me. Malachi Moreno is my pick.
Awesome. So I'm up next for the Warriors at 55. So a lot is up in the air with this team, I think, Nick.
Yes.
I think how the last game in the play-in ended with them losing to the Suns and Steve Kerr, Draymond, and stuff. It kind of seemed like they're saying goodbye, right?
It really did. Yeah.
It seemed like that was the end of, you know, the dynasty and everything that they built over there. So I don't know what's going to happen next, but they, you know, if you're looking at their core right now, Pods has, you know, been a key factor offensively for them. But I mean, if you look at their roster down here, Nick, I mean, it's kind of all over the place. And, you know, Porzingis was a late addition as well. He has, you know, health issues and playing time limited too. So I don't know. I mean, if you're looking at, you know, 55, if the 55 pick to, you know, save the Warriors, you're not really going to, you know, most likely you're not going to find it here at this point of the draft, but it could be a good, you know, starting piece, good depth piece for them. And I don't know if I'm going to like shock you, Nick, here, actually. No, I think I'm just going to go with Gillespie here. I think if you're looking to, you know, see what Steph does at the point guard spot, and you need some, you know, ball handling depth to you. And Jacoby Gillespie has, you know, proven that. He's an older player, but he sure as hell does not play like, you know, smaller than he is. He's a great finisher at the rim, can shoot the ball, very good ball handler, primary playmaker, and kind of just makes big bucket after big bucket. And I think him, you know, if the Warriors were able to snag him this late in the second round, it could be a good piece, good option for them going forward.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, really just someone who can be a part of their rotation is going to be huge at this point. Yeah, as you said, if you're hoping to get your franchise future with the 55th pick, you're going to be searching for a very long time. But, you know, get someone who can come in, have the ball in his hands, score around the rim, put some pressure on the basket. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And there are a few ball handlers that are, for me anyway, in a sort of similar range at this portion of the draft. And really a lot of it comes down to personal preference. And yeah, especially in terms of the rim pressure, Gillespie makes a lot of sense. We're going to take one more quick break here, and then we are going to close it out. We're almost done here.
I know.
All Alrighty, I am up for the Chicago Bulls with the 56th overall pick. I'm torn in two different directions here, which is a bit cheap to say because this is kind of how I always feel when we get to this portion of the draft, of the odds of any of these players making it to the NBA is, the odds are strongly stacked against any player taken with a 56th pick to even make it to the NBA. So do I go with someone who I think can be a bit player, but maybe not much more than that? Or do I just take the wild swing? And I think I'm going to take the swing, and I'm going to go with Sergio De La Rea. And he is he's probably going to be the third international player off the board after Swigo, who already went, and Kareem Lopez, who is all but guaranteed to go in the first round, who we talked about very recently here on the Old Deep Dives podcast. Yeah, I mean, with De La Rea, he's someone, you know, he's big point guard at 6'6", has shown a lot for Valencia in terms of his ability to create for himself and others. He's, you know, he'll be 21 by the time his first NBA season starts. So not quite as young as Swigo, but, you know, certainly someone who has a lot of developmental room in front of him. He's solid enough around the basket. Really, for me, this is just sort of taking a bet on a big playmaker. Certainly, given what the Bulls have done with Josh Giddey, that's a bet that they've shown they're willing to take. And I am curious to see if he ends up being draft and stash, if he ends up coming over to the U.S. to play NCAA ball. But if he ends up being on the Bulls, I mean, they have a lot of depth up front at point guard. They have a lot of big man depth and not that much in the in-between zones. So bringing on someone like De La Rea, who's got a bit more size, who could potentially play either guard spot, depending on, you know, who the Bulls have ready and available that day between Giddey, Sexton, Trey Jones, Simons, et cetera, Rob Dillingham. I think De La Rea is someone who could potentially play either guard spot, and he's one of the higher upside bets on my board at this point. So I think it's worth it to take a swing. You know, if he ends up staying over in Europe, then, you know, not too much skin off Chicago's back, but certainly he's someone who, if it all ends up working out, he could be well above your typical 56 pick.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you're not, for the Chicago Bulls, so much has happened. I mean, they're really starting from ground zero, you know, basically cleaning house. So
yeah.
I think Sergio here, it's a good, you know, at least as you mentioned, draft and stash type of player here. Cause I think we're about to see possibly a new era, for the Bulls, obviously with them cleaning house, but I think just in general, I mean, it had to happen, right? Because I mean, the Bulls, I mean, their legacy and dynasty, has kind of been like, this is just how they are now, when they used to be like the best, you know, team in the NBA. And for them to go from that to this was definitely needed. So I'm up next with the 57th pick for the Hawks. And I picked Tyler Tanner early in the second round at pick 31. So I think for them, I mean, I mentioned Dyson Daniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jalen Johnson. Kuminga obviously has kind of had a resurgence with the Hawks too, after, you know, leaving the Warriors. So, definitely like his, spot here, and obviously Onyeka Okongwu. So I think I'm going to go, yeah, at this point at the draft, I'm kind of like, I mean, hey, if Dash was still in the draft, it'd be kind of fun to have him and Dyson together, but I mean, they need a little bit, you know, any offensive capabilities between the brothers a little bit more. So I think I'm gonna go Nate Biddle here. I think
I am so annoyed, and I'll explain why in a moment.
Nate Biddle has been an interesting evaluation for me this year. I could see him definitely working out, but on the flip side, not working out at all. I'm kind of in between with that. He brings that size, that pick and pop capability. You know, he's true 7-footer, good laterally mover. Another player that is reaping the benefits of a lot of people, a lot of prospects, you know, elect him to go back. But he produces, right? I mean, 16.8 points, 6.9 rebounds, 2.6 assists, 1.8 blocks. And he's kind of that, you know, perfect kind of stash center that, you know, can, you know, if Onyeka Okongwu, Kuminga, you know, have, you know, injuries or, you know, health issues, whatever the case may be, he can at least come in and provide some stableness around the rim at the five spot. And he can also, you know, shoot the rock a decent amount. But he also kind of went through kind of some low periods with his shot. But, I mean, at pick number, you know, this late in the draft at pick 57, I mean, I think it makes sense for the Hawks here.
So, yeah, I was planning on taking him here for New Orleans at 58. So that's why I'm so frustrated. Yeah, I mean, I just... spoiler alert, wrote his profile for the No Ceilings draft guide a little bit before we started recording today. And the inconsistency is extremely frustrating in terms of the shooting. But he's, as you mentioned, he's, you know, he measured out at 7'5" with a 7'6" wingspan at G League Elite camp last year, right? I'm willing to bet he hasn't shrunk since last year. And, you know, New Orleans, other than two-way guy Hunter Dickinson, doesn't have anybody on the roster who's 7 feet tall. And they also really struggled with three-point shooting. And so his combination of rim protection, shooting potential, yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And again, I would have taken him here for New Orleans at 58. So clearly I'm not objecting to you taking him earlier, other than the fact that I can't take him here, which, yeah. Anyway, so now I have to pick someone else for New Orleans. I have to figure out what I'm going to do here. See, this is... It's tough for a number of reasons, but I think the biggest tough part for me here is they have a lot of players who in theory are much better shooters than they were this last year. And so I don't know how important it is to get them another shooter, just because I expect a significant percentage of their roster to shoot better than they did this past year. Yeah. Gosh, this is, it's a real struggle. I mean, you know, we've been saying that for a number of picks in a row now, but yeah, this would have been a lot easier if I could have just said Nate Biddle and moved on. I'm going to go with Tucker DeVries. I was considering someone else who in theory I might take at 60 if you haven't taken them it at 59 just to extra piss me off, but no, I mean, in terms of DeVries, you know, he had the shoulder injury, barely played at all this past season after the transfer to Indiana. But I mean, he is a high volume elite floor spacer who also has size. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be a fantastic or even plus NBA defender, but he's not helpless on that end. And certainly being in that 6-7 range is helpful for him in that regard. And yeah, I mean, ultimately this is a team that again, just barely made it out of the bottom five in terms of 3-point percentage. Even if I think a lot of their shooters are going to do better than that, I think there's more room for a shooter to sort of work their way in on, you know, the sort of bigger side of the rotation, you know, given they've got all this guard depth between DeJounte Murray, Jordan Poole, Jeremiah Fears, our guy Jordan Hawkins, Micah Peavy. They've got a lot of guard depth. And so I think getting a bigger shooter is going to be nice for them. So Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how quickly and how well DeVries returns from that shoulder surgery. Certainly as someone who watched Devin Carter come back from his shoulder surgery way too soon in his rookie year, I would hope that they're willing to bring him along more slowly. But I would be surprised if Tucker DeVries does not play NBA minutes at some point. And so if you get that guy at 58, maybe he doesn't play until the, you know, the 27-28 season. You know, maybe he isn't quite ready for next year for the Pelicans. But in terms of what he can do as a high, high, high volume shooter, I think he's worth taking a chance on here at 58.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, if you're looking at his last season with Indiana, Indiana had a very bad year this year too. And a lot was, you know, on Tucker DeVries' shoulders. I mean, shooting wise, you know, he only shot 33% at 7.7 attempts per game this season, you know, down from 48% from last year. But I mean, he's still getting to his spots. He's still able to, you know, show his capabilities on the perimeter, and he has that size to him at, you know, 6'7", 6'8". And I think at, you know, at 58, you're going to take a, you know, guy that has length, size, and can shoot the rock and can has connective playmaking chops. I mean, why not? Right. So, yeah. I'm up next, second to last pick 59 for the Spurs. And I'm going to go with Ugana Onyeka. I mean, I think, you know, learning from the most polarizing big man in the league with Victor Wembanyama, the face of, you know, the NBA, the upcoming face of the NBA, you know, it seems like a Spurs pick here. Not only did he, you know, he led the NCAA in block rate at 17.5%, he also has he's just a gigantic human being. Like, he also has a 7'5" wingspan. 21 years old, 7'5" wingspan. And if you look at, you know, his production, he only played about less than 19 minutes per game. But when he is, you know, protecting around the rim, he is a massive threat there. He's limited in mobility. I don't really trust him to kind of move anywhere outside the dunker spot. But I mean, in terms of size and kind of upside that you're getting with him, I mean, he did have a few, you know, flashes shooting wise, not really, but I mean, if you're going to get him at 59 for the Spurs, I mean, it kind of seems like something they would do there. So,
yeah, I think it's a great pick. He was heavily in consideration for me with New Orleans at the previous pick for the exact same reason that I was so upset that you sniped Nate Biddle from me, right? He's, you know, he's got that size. He's got that interior defense. He doesn't quite have the additional bump of potential shooting threat that Biddle provides, but yeah, I mean, that block rate is just it's one of those, like, even as you were saying, it's like, that can't be right. It's like, I gotta, like, nope, that's, yeah, no, he is absurdly good at what he does. And, you know, again, for the 59th pick, it's not like he's likely to be playing 30 minutes a game, right? So have him come in for 10, 12 minutes a game, just do what he does best. Yeah, no, that's excellent pickup. I'm honestly a little annoyed with myself that I probably should have taken him for New Orleans instead of DeVries, but hey, it's the 58th pick in the draft. I can't overthink it too much.
True. True. All right, Nick, close us out.
We have made it to the end. I'm just gonna go with the philosophy that I've said a few times already and will probably say a few times again. Well, no, I won't, because this is the last pick, but, you know, future exercises, I will probably say this again. I'm gonna take someone who I'm most confident is an NBA player at the very least, and I'm gonna go with Chase Ross out of Marquette. Yeah. He has really, over the past couple of seasons, shown a lot more as sort of a playmaker when, you know, earlier on in his college career, he showed a lot of flashes as a scorer, certainly. But, you know, this year he really stepped it up in terms of taking a bigger role playmaking wise and started to see some of that last year. But this year was an even bigger leap forward in that regard. He made an all-defensive team. He certainly is a crazy defensive playmaker in terms of steals. I'm not as high on his defensive outlook just because, quite frankly, I think a lot of those steals were gambling steals rather than, you know, good, solid, straight up defense steals. But it's not like he's a bad defender by any stretch of the imagination. And 6'5", 210, you know, he's got good bulk to be a combo guard. I think his three-point shooting this past season was a lot less of an indicator of who he is as a shooter than his overall college career. I mean, you know, not fantastic, but 33% from deep his college career, sub 30% this year. I think he's much more of a low 30s guy than a sub 30 guy. He also shot more threes this year than he ever has before, which certainly I think played a pretty decent role in that. And again, he's someone who scaled up a lot offensively this past season, and there were ups and downs to it, certainly, but you know, him being the 60th pick, he's not going to be in anywhere near as large of an offensive role. And, you know, sort of similar idea of, I think he works a lot better as a rotation piece than the primary offensive guy. And that's certainly what he would be, you know, sort of regardless of where he ends up next year. And, you know, the Wizards do have a number of guards. It'll be interesting to see sort of how that shakes out next season with Trae Young presumably playing a larger role in the rotation for the Wizards. But I think Ross is someone who could play at either guard spot, can play well off whoever is occupying the other slot. And again, you know, I'm not the highest in the world on his defense, but I think he can definitely contribute in that regard. And ultimately, he just needs to do enough offensively to get his way onto the floor. And, you know, given that less than half of 60th picks make it to the NBA at all, I'm willing to bet on Chase Ross being someone who does end up playing NBA minutes at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on it briefly, Nick, but he's improved every single year from freshman year at Marquette. He also stayed at Marquette all 4 years. Loyal player. His assist percentage jumped from 12.1 to 20.2 this year. And if you look at his defensive rebounding numbers too, 10.7 defensive rebounding rate to 12.6. I mean, he's the type of guy that he's going to work hard. He has great work ethic, and he's going to make winning plays that lead to extra possessions. And, you know, he can be that connective play piece to play off of, you know, Keyshawn George, Trae Young too. And at the 60th pick, if you're Washington Wizards, that's what you kind of need. And he's also very, very reliable too. So yeah, I think to close this out, that was definitely kind of the way I was going to go too. So.
Oh, there you go. Our unanimous 60th pick.
There we go.
We did it. We did it. Oh. Round 2.5? Round 3? Whatever.
Whatever. Certainly, whatever the viewers want to call it.
Yeah. It's certainly the third time we have mock drafted second round picks, whether it be a full second round mock draft in one episode or not. We did draft the full second round. So yeah. I think that will do it for us for today and for attempt 2 at our second round mock draft. She is Paige Otto. You can find her on social media at @PaigeOtto_. You can find me on social media at NBA Johnson. You can find both of our written work on NoCeilingsNBA.com. If you are listening to the podcast, please be sure to leave a rating and a review in whatever podcast player you might be using. Always much appreciated on our end. And if you're checking us out on YouTube, be sure to like the video and subscribe to the channel. And if you have any feedback regarding the deep dive specific portion of the podcast, you can feel free to reach out to either of us via the aforementioned social media channels, or you can shoot me an email, nickaj.nba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.